Thanks for coming. It's been the end of the tail end of quite a long day. So I'm Zach. I'm the CTO of the ASIC protocol. We are a privacy solution for Ethereum, so we provide the tooling and resources that enables people to build private smart contracts and private tokens. And what I'd like to talk about today is a new piece of technology that we developed in collaboration with Protocol Labs, a new universal snark. Is this?
No.
Oh, that might be dead. Awesome. Hey!
There's one chat, it's linked around your.
Ah, thanks for that, yeah. Okay. As a bit of an outline, kind of a high level, I'd like to kind of just give a bit of an overview about, you know, why snarks are useful, why they're important, what we're trying to do with them. And then go into a little bit about, into a rather some low-level depth about Plonk, this new universal smart we've constructed, and try and, I guess, dispel some of the mysticism behind snarks, and actually provide some insights and intuitions behind how they work. So, what's the fuss about snarks? I imagine everyone here is kind of relatively familiar with the high-level stuff, that you can use snarks to effectively make computation free on Ethereum by just serving a proof of computation instead of actually requiring every node to perform the computation themselves. In addition to that, you can also add privacy, because with a snark, you can hide the inputs and outputs to your proof. The apotheosis of this is not just if you hide the inputs and outputs to your proof, but also if you hide the identities of the people sending transactions, and if you hide the actual smart contract code that's being executed. And this can all be achieved with varying degrees of practicality. So, how does Plonk fit into this landscape? It's been a rather snarky summer. What can you say? There's been a lot of new technologies that have been put out, and Plonk is a small part of this landscape of tech. So I just kind of want to talk about some of the intuitions behind it, what it does, why we think it's useful. So it's a universal snark that was kind of designed from the ground up by us to be viable on Ethereum. By that I mean ensuring that the verification runtime was fast enough to be gas efficient on Ethereum, and for proofs to be able to be constructed for relatively complicated circuits on average consumer grade hardware. So, you know, like just relatively simple, consumer grade laptops, basically. It's inspired by its predecessors, so Sonic, like the first universal Sonic that required that was practical. Didn't require like a quadratically sized reference string. And iterated on previous works by Grob and Bayer. So we published Plonk about a month and a half ago, and we've been very busy building an implementation of a Plonk proven verifier algorithm. And this is also very very proof of concept stuff, but it's in an advanced enough state that we can publish the benchmarks. So this is over the BN254 curve, so the curve that Ethereum has precompiled for. The relevant graph is the top left. This is the proof construction times for a selection of circuits with varying number of gates. And I guess the takeaway of this is that for over a million gates, proof construction on my Surface Pro is under 23 seconds. And when you get down to things like 2 to 17 gates, the proof construction is less than 3 seconds. This is. It means this is most practical for day-to-day use on Ethereum. We estimate that a typical private transaction snark will run you at about 128,000 to 512,000 Plonk gates. This is the website of the library that we've been building. It's open source, contributions very welcome. Feel free to tinker around with it. That's the high-level stuff. Why don't we kind of get to the guts of how snarks work and what's going on with them. So, sorry, it's a bit loud. 1 second. There we go. We use polynomial commitment schemes in Plonk. We have this in common with Sonic and Marlin, which was a contemporaneous proving system. And the reason why we use polynomial commitments is because it's a very efficient way of achieving succinctness for your snark system. Effectively, we know how to succinctly commit to polynomials, so you can take a polynomial with a very large degree, which encodes an enormous amount of information, and represent it within a single elliptic curve point. And you can then have, if you can represent your snark circuit via a polynomial identity involving these polynomial commitments, then a verification algorithm can test this polynomial identity by testing it at a random evaluation point. and have confidence that with overwhelming probability, if your kind of snark description holds at a random point, it'll hold at every point. This also, interestingly, divorces Planck from the underlying kind of cryptographic primitives that are used to instantiate the polynomial commitment scheme. You can run Planck not just on elliptic curves, which is how we published it, but you could also instantiate it over like a commitment scheme that uses interactive coral proofs, or even class groups, judging by the latest research by Benedict Boots and his team. So if you want to make a wish list of what you need to make a universal, to make a snark, obviously we want a way of constructing, turning a program into a proof of knowledge, and so this is typically done with addition, multiplication, gates that are stitched together to form a circuit, because this is a relatively natural way of representing problem statements when you're testing these proofs of knowledge using cryptosystems that use finite field arithmetic. We want the verifier to run in effectively constant time, and we want this to be universal, so we want there to be only one trusted setup to bootstrap the system, and then you can encode arbitrary programs as snark circuits without running additional trusted setups. In a perfect world, you wouldn't have any trusted setups, but then you do pay a small cost for this with increased proof sizes, which is a little bit of a problem for Ethereum. So, can I just ask, who here is not familiar with the concept of a gate in the context of snarks? Awesome. Okay, so basically a gate has input and output wires, a gate basically the primitive arithmetic operations that you want to compose your program into. In the same way that you can take any computer program and decompose it into like a sequence of NAND gates, because that's what's inside your CPU chip, you can also take a computer program and decompose it into a sequence of additions and multiplications. And so that's what we're doing when we create snark circuits. We're effectively taking these primitive gates and stitching them together to create a representation of a more complicated program segment. And we have additions and multiplication gates, and they all have two input bars and one output wire. And you can make a circuit by stitching these gates together, where the ordering and sequencing of where these wires go will be completely nonlinear and rather chaotic, and probably created by a compiler and not a human. And you then want to prove that you have a satisfying assignment to your circuit. So you want to prove that all the wire values are what they ought to be if you were acting in good faith. So with Planck, you then, when you're stitching together all of these gates, you have to kind of whenever you make a connection between your gates, you're effectively stitching two wires together. You can avoid stitching multiple wires together, because you can have multiple, an output wire that feeds into multiple input wires, and then you've got to kind of validate that if you serve a proof of knowledge that you've actually that you run the program correctly, that you've evaluated the circuit, and all of the wires have the correct values that they should have if you were acting honestly. So fundamentally, if you wanted to represent a program as one of these proofs of knowledge, you really have to do two things. You have to perform a local arithmetic check. So you need to check that the arithmetic relationship for every single gate has been satisfied, that the two input wires either summed or multiplied together is equal to the output wire. And then you need to perform a global consistency check. You need to validate that the wires are correctly assigned between all of the gates, so that if one output wire feeds into several input wires of other gates, that's actually being done correctly. The first check is reasonably easy to do. The second check has been the bane of universal snark systems for quite some time. But this is something which we think we've made some huge leaps in cracking. So I'll start with the local check, because that's the relatively easy part. 1 second. And I like to think about snark circuits and using vectors instead of polynomials, because polynomials are abstract and complex and a little bit unintuitive. Vectors are much more simple to work with, and then we can map between vectors and polynomials later on. So in Planck, we have we want one arithmetic expression for all of our gates, whether they be multiplication or addition gates, because it simplifies the verification runtime. And so you can do this with the concept of selector vectors. So if W, L, W, R, W, O are vectors that encode your left, right, and output wires for all of the gates in your circuit, then by taking dot products with these vectors and selector vectors that are kind of defined when you compile your circuit. So they're created by the circuit programmer, not the proof constructor. Then you can either turn on or off multiplication gates or addition gates for one of these indices. So to kind of clarify, if you wanted one of these rows to be a multiplication gate, you'd make sure that the QL value and the QR value of the circuit polynomials are set to zero. Ta-da, you have multiplications, and similarly for additions, you would set the multiplication gate selected to zero. You can also use these selector vectors to scale up or down the values of the wires feeding into these gates if necessary, and you also have the ability to add kind of constant coefficients into your gate. So this is a kind of an example toy circuit that Vitalik put down in his blog article, and I thought it would be helpful to go through it just kind of just elucidate a little bit what it looks like to actually represent program as a circuit. So this is a small example where you have a circuit where you have some input value x, and you want to check that the output wire is x cubed plus x plus 5. And so you have the first multiplication gate, the left and right wires are going to be feeding x into the gate, so the output should be x squared. And then in the second gate, you're then multiplying x squared by x, voila, you get x cubed. You're then adding that together with x. And then finally adding the output of that with 5. Just one small caveat, actually, you don't need that last multiplication gate because you can feed 5 as a constant to this gate, but the general principle holds. And then the output should be 35. And then the job of a verifier is to check that that you have actually supplied the correct y values, like the values that all these y should take if x is 3. So, now we get into something a little bit more offbeat. So I've been talking about vectors, but we actually verify our proofs of knowledge using polynomial arithmetic. So how on earth do we map from vectors to polynomials? Well, the solution is to use something called a Lagrange base, where effectively a Lagrange polynomial is a special set of points on the x-axis. So if you have a vector of 10 elements will pick 10 points on your x-axis. So we use the roots of unity for a range of reasons, but they don't need to be in this toy example. And a Lagrange polynomial will be a polynomial where at one of those special points, it will evaluate to 1, and all the rest it will evaluate to 0. It's effectively a delta function. And you can use these to encode, to turn your vector into polynomials, because you map each vector index to one of the special points that you're using to define your Lagrange polynomials. And then you take a linear sum, so you'll multiply each vector element by its associated Lagrange polynomial, and then you'll sum them together, and you will have a polynomial where at those special x coordinates that you selected in advance, the y values will be the values of your vector elements. This is a relatively convenient way of representing vectors as polynomials because it preserves vector arithmetic, and that's the really important thing. So just to clarify a little bit here, so this is like formally how you construct a Lagrange polynomial, where omega here is the roots of unity, and if you run the mathematics, this will be equal to the ith root of unity, Li of x will be 1, and the jth root, and any other root of unity will be equal to 0. So we can now take what were vectors and turn them into polynomials. So taking those linear sums I mentioned earlier, where you take vector elements and you multiply by the relevant Lagrange polynomial, then you take a linear sum. You do this for the selector polynomials, and that uniquely defines a circuit for your SNARK, and then you do that for the wire values, which defines a satisfying assignment to your SNARK. The value of this is then you can take all the vector arithmetic that you use to describe your gate equations and directly map it to polynomial arithmetic. Because if you have a vector identity which is equal to zero everywhere, then the resulting polynomial identity will be equal to zero modulus this so-called vanishing polynomial. To give some intuition about why this is, if we consider like one of the special points that we use to encode these polynomials, so say at the first, like the second element of these vectors, if we like view the resulting polynomials that you're creating, that means that the second root of unity, your polynomials will be evaluates to the values in your vectors. Which means that if you take a vector identity which is equal to zero, then the resulting polynomial identity will produce a polynomial where at that root of unity it will also be zero. Which means that if this vector identity holds, then the resulting polynomial will be zero at all of the roots of unity, special x points that you pick in advance. And so the vanishing polynomial is the lowest degree polynomial that is also equal to zero at all the roots of unity. And so you know that if you have a satisfying assignment to your circuit, then this polynomial identity will always be divisible by that vanishing polynomial, and you can test for that. So check that you've correctly assigned your y is on your circuit in the proper way. Well, that's how we do a local check. So I'm just going to stop and take a drink. It's absolutely partial. By the way, feel free to ask chat questions, heckle, anything. If you have any questions, I suspect you're not the only ones. How do you actually do the global check now? Now we've talked about, great, you can check that every gate in your circuit is being correctly evaluated, but how do you check that you've actually stitched up all the wires together? Well, that's a little bit tricky, because what you need to do effectively is, if you have an output wire from one gate that feeds into multiple input wires in a bunch of other gates, you need to effectively check that wire value has been copied correctly. Your left wires from your first, your fifth, and your eighth gates as equal to the output wire of your fourth gate, something like that, something a bit odd and nonlinear. And the way that we achieve this plot is with a permutation check. And so permutation is a simple word that hides a rather terrifying nest of nightmares, but I will try and condense down the intuition behind why we use the permutations. Effectively, what we're doing is, if you take all of the wire values in your circuit, you can map them into a kind of like a 2D coordinate space. You take the value of the wire, and you map it to like a unique value on the x-axis. The result of that is you have a set of points, one for each of your wire values. You can then perform the same mapping, but instead you map your wire values to different points, but in such a way that, for example, if you have three wire values that need to be the same because they're copies of each other, then you want to effectively map those three wires into the same coordinate space, but in a different order. And what I mean by this is, for example, imagine you have three wires in your circuit, and they need to be the same values. Then you can kind of create two vectors, where you're basically, your first vector is you map your wires into this coordinate space, and then your second vector is you're mapping those same wires into, so if you're mapping like B1, B2, and B3, like three wires into terabits. So let's say that we assign, if you have three wires, like the first three wires in your circuit, imagine they need to be the same value. Then you can assign indices to these wires. So you can say, okay, fine, I'm going to map the first wire to 1, the second wire to 2, the third wire to 3. Yeah. Then you're also then going to do a permutation. So you're saying, okay, now I'm going to map my first wire to coordinate 3, my second wire to coordinate 2, and my first wire to coordinate 1. You now have two collections of coordinates where those two sets, if the wires are genuine copies of each other, then those coordinates will be the same but just in a different order. And that's why we call it a permutation. And the reason we do this rather convoluted thing technique to check the copy relationships is because we know how to do permutations succinctly and efficiently. That was one of the innovations of Planck. Effectively, if you want to choose that two vectors are identical to a permutation, what you do is you inject some randomness into your vector elements. So take your random beta, for example, and you then multiply beta by the index of your vector. So you take A1, you add beta to it, you add 2 beta to A2, you add 3 beta to A3. You then take your B elements and you multiply B1, you add 3 beta to B1, beta to B2, and 2 beta to B3. So what this is trying to capture is that those betas, they appear exactly once in both of these three sets, but in different orders. So, for example, the only way A1 plus beta and B2 plus beta, effectively A1 plus beta and B2 plus beta need to be the same, and that will only be the case if A1 equals B2, And you can then go around this permutation and check that, you know, effectively, if these three sets of coordinates equals equals the other, so the B coordinates, then the only way that can be the case is if all of the A and B coordinates are the same value. The TLDR to this is if B is not a permutation of A, then with almost certainty the set of the A coordinates, once you've added them to the random beta terms, will not be the same as the B coordinates. And then, so again, the final step is effectively what that will prove to you is that you, if you, with just adding one random element into your kind of a coordinate tuples, that will enable you to prove that you have two sets of coordinates that have the same values but in a different order, but you've not yet proven that those coordinate tuples are in the correct order that you need to genuinely prove a copy relationship. So we add a second random coordinate gamma to validate this. Effectively, we take each one of those coordinates tuples that we created and we add a random gamma to it, and then we take the product of them all. And so the point of this is, effectively, we've mapped our y values into two different coordinate spaces where the sets of coordinates need to be the same, but they will be in a different jumbled up order. And so the way we check that is, well, we just take the product of them, and if the products are the same, then we have a valid mapping, which means that your y's have been correctly copied, which means that you've correctly stitched up all the y's in a second. Yes?
Should that be
B1
double prime multiplied by?
Yes, it should be. Sorry, a bit of a side note there. It should be 1B1. Right, okay, I've got 1 minute left. So, good, because just about to finish. So, a quick internal assay today. So, what are we actually using this for? What's the goal? What's the purpose? We think it's pretty cool technology, but without the use case, it's just a toy, and we aren't building toys at that stage. The goal, the apotheosis of this all, is to do private payments, to do private bond issuance, equities, loans. Effectively, all of the traditional financial services that you do today, where you expect privacy by default, where you might want to use the consensus of a public blockchain, because you might not trust your counterparties, but you don't want to do it in full view of everyone. You don't want your salaries to be streamed publicly, you don't want your badges to be public, you don't want your neighbors to see when you apply for a mortgage if they're public. You might not want your trading positions to be public because that would be a massive competitive disadvantage if people know that you're looking to sell and exit from a large position. So, as it currently stands, have a kind of a collection of proofs that we're about to launch on mainnet. This isn't Plonk, this is a slightly older technology we're using because Plonk is really quite recent tech that we're going to be aggressively integrating into Aztec. But for now, we kind of have a suite of privacy-preserving zero-knowledge proofs that allow you to do basic financial transactions where the values are encrypted. So send swaps, income, bins, and burns. Just before I finish, what I really want to get onto is this ignition. This is Aztec's trusted setup ceremony. I mentioned at the start that Plonk needs a trusted setup. It only needs one. And that one trusted setup is going to be happening pretty immediately after DevCon. So we're collecting sign-ups to be a participant to the ceremony. And we want as many people as possible. We're going to be running Ignition for a month, and anybody can take part, so please feel free to sign up. The idea is this common reference string we're building. If only one participant in our ceremony acts honestly and destroys the kind of toxic waste that they generate in a similar way to Zcash, the entire scheme, the resulting crypto system will be secure under traditional cryptographic assumptions. So we hope this will be a kind of a common good that will be able to be used by a lot of different projects on Ethereum and elsewhere. That wants to instantiate these succinct proving systems for their own uses. And so this is kind of just a dashboard of what it would look like. We have a front end that you can tune into to see who is performing the ceremony at any given time. And you can see a kind of your theory just in the queue if you sign on when you sign up. I believe that is it. Thank you very much. It's been fun. Thank you.